the visit of the Magi or Magi. We often think of them as being wise men or kings, but they've given us this title here of Magi. There are three voices that speak in this narrative. Did you spot them? Did you see who they were? There are the Magi themselves, there as they come. There's King Herod as he speaks to them. And then there are a group who are described as the chief priests and teachers of the law, Herod's religious advisors. Those three groups, and I just want to talk about them for a short time. And they have different responses to the news that God's promised king has been born. What were their responses? Well, there's those advisors, those chief priests and teachers of the law who show indifference. And there's Herod who shows hatred. And there's those Magi who show curiosity. They investigate and then they worship. So let's talk about each of them for a moment. These advisors, chief priests and teachers of the law. We don't have any chief priests and teachers of the law in St. Breville's. Who would they be then? Well, they're the religious experts. They're the ones who are called in to solve this religious puzzle. When the king, when Herod has a religious question, a Bible question, he knows they can answer it. They would have known their Bible really well. They know it so well that when they're called in, they can just give off the answer like that. They can tell him that the promised Messiah, the special one, the one that God had promised for thousands of years that he would send, the one that they had been waiting for, hoping for, longing for, he's in Bethlehem. This is the most important news that had ever been given in the history of their nation. Actually, the most important news that had ever been given in the history of the world. He's in Bethlehem. They're in Jerusalem. How far from Bethlehem to Jerusalem? Well, it's a bit less than 6 miles. It's no further than Lydney is. And bearing that in mind, what is it that they then do? When they hear this news, he's arrived, the one you were waiting for, the one that's been promised, what do they do? Absolutely nothing at all. Nothing. Their indifference is staggering. It's a kind of apathy that I can't even be bothered to explain. It's incredible. Thousands of years they've been waiting. He arrives. And they can't be bothered to go as far as Lydney. They know what God has said and they couldn't care less. They understand who Jesus is. And they just can't be bothered. They're the ones who ought to be most excited, and yet they just find it all too inconvenient. St. Breville's doesn't have chief priests and teachers of the law, but it does have religious people. People who go to church regularly. People that have a Bible. People that read a Bible. Or people that even study a Bible. Is that you? But are you actually, then, like these guys, indifferent, apathetic, largely unaffected by what you know, what you believe, hasn't really made a difference to you? That's these advisors and their indifference. But the second individual to see here, then, is Herod. Herod the Great. Herod the Great is a certifiable nutter. He really is. He's a man of great evil. It's a guy who had three of his sons executed and one of his wives. This is a guy who gave instructions for prominent family heads in Jerusalem to be executed on the day of his death so that when he was buried there would be public mourning. When he hears that God's promised Messiah, the promised king is coming, What's his response? We're told he was disturbed. And later on we're told about he's furious. And you know what happens. He plans here to kill Jesus. He sends the wise men off to do his investigating for him. Track down this baby. And when they trick him and go off to somewhere else, he has all the infants executed in the village of Bethlehem. 20, 30 perhaps toddlers. His response to the news that God's promised king is coming is rage and fear. Why? Why does he react like that? I mean, sometimes we think of Jesus as being tame, comfortable, nice. A kind of a first century hippie going around promoting peace and love. And that you can kind of take or leave him. Now, if that's your view of Jesus, you've understood Jesus less than King Herod does. Because King Herod understands this. If Jesus is the promised king, if he is who God says he is, then he turns everything upside down. He overthrows everything. Indifference is not a logical response to Jesus. It shows you haven't really understood it. Hatred, what Herod does, is a logical response. The worship that the wise men bring, that's a rational response. But indifference to Jesus suggests that you're not really clear on who he is or what that means. So there's the advisors and their indifference, their apathy. There's Herod with his rage and his fury and his hatred and his anger. But let's home in on the Magi, because they're the hero of the story, aren't they? We have in our mind a picture of three of them. We picture three of them because the carol tells us so. And it's on all your Christmas cards. They do bring three gifts, but we don't know if there were two of them bringing three gifts or 21 of them sharing them out between them. We know that there's plural, there's more than one, and that's about as much as we get. What is a magi then? Well, it's the word from which we get the word magician from the same root. It's people who deal in the occult, in the mystical. People interested in stars and dreams and astrology and magic and the future. If you could imagine Russell Grant and Mystic Meg and Sir Patrick Moore all kind of rolled into one, you have the magi. And Matthew's readers, who were devout Jews, would have really looked down on these guys. And the chief priests and the teachers of the law, who Herod called in, would have absolutely despised them. But they've seen a sign. They know something is going on. They're not sure what's going on, but they know something is going on. And so they investigate. They've come from, well, they're off in kind of Persia or Babylon, perhaps. That's Iran, Iraq. They've travelled more than 500 miles by caravan. And I don't mean the thing you tow along on the back of your car. I mean camels. That's a journey of, well, over a month. They've come to investigate. Some of you, I know, have got questions about what Christians believe. About Christianity, about Christian belief. You've been very open about that. You've told me that. You're not there yet. But let me encourage you. Be like these guys. Investigate. They know something's going on. They're not sure what it is. So they decide they will find out more. Christmas, we remember that remarkable event when God came to earth. When infinite God became a baby. And I'm aware that that is a frankly outrageous claim I'm making. That's not just sort of tame and easy and forgettable. That's a crazy thing to say. But God, born as a baby. And yet that's what Christians have been saying for the last 2,000 years. And so I'm saying to you, investigate it. If that sounds frankly outrageous, it's for a good reason. Investigate it. Find out more. Go away and read one of these gospel accounts, these biographies of Jesus. Find out what kind of man he is. Speak to someone. You could ask me. Or you could speak to the friend that you're sat next to. People you know about these things. Investigate. Think it through. You can't be indifferent to a claim like that. Either it's true, which is massively significant, or Christianity is a load of rubbish. If you understand who Jesus is and what he's done, it will provoke a response. It may be that you get angry and you reject, you don't want anything to do with it, you hate these claims. Or maybe it's like the Magi, you investigate more and you end up worshipping him. But if you've understood Jesus, you won't be indifferent. When their investigation is complete, when they find Jesus, we see what happens. They were overjoyed. They bowed down and they worshipped him. To worship just means to give him what's due to him, what he's worth. Remember the L'Oreal advert? Because I'm worth it? Well, worship is giving what someone is worth. Jesus is worth it. And they give their gifts, and you know what their gifts were. They bring gold and frankincense and myrrh. And gold you're familiar with. You wouldn't mind getting a bit of gold under the Christmas tree this year? Gold painted stuff hanging on the tree is as close as we'll get in our house. Sorry, Rose. But you know that gold symbolizes great power and wealth. It symbolizes royalty. And frankincense. I doubt you're going to get much frankincense under the Christmas tree this year. What is frankincense? Where does it come from? Well, it's made from the sap of the... I've got to look this up because I can't say this properly. The olibanum tree grows in the Arabian Peninsula and some on the Horn of Africa too, but kind of Yemen, that area. It takes 8 to 10 years after you plant the trees before you can harvest resin. And the trees are very delicate. The bark is like paper. It breaks off easily. So the collecting of this resin has to be done by hand. It gets picked off, the individual hardened chunks are inspected, and then they're deemed some kind of good enough quality and they can get sold off. It's incredibly expensive stuff. And they used to use it in the temple to worship God. It symbolizes God. Gold and frankincense and myrrh. What is myrrh? This is a really weird one. Myrrh is also a resin. It also comes from a tree. It was at times in the past so valuable that it would be traded weight for weight with gold. But it's used for embalming. They turn up to the baby, well, infant, with myrrh, the stuff you use for embalming. It's like going to a baby shower and bringing along a headstone with you. That's odd, isn't it? Gold, symbolizing the royalty of this newborn. Frankincense, used to worship God. And myrrh, pointing to death. Symbolizes a king who is divine, and yet who faces death. In the carol, We Three Kings, there's a line, I think it's in the last verse, that talks about king and God and sacrifice. That's who we're talking about, Jesus. He won't remain a toddler. He grows up, he becomes a man, he lives a life, a short life. Before he's my age, he's been executed on a cross, but raised again, ascended into heaven, and one day he's going to return. If you've investigated, if like the wise men, you've come face to face with this Jesus, then you know who he is and you will come and worship. There are three voices in the story. There's the advisors, There's Herod and the Magi. There's different responses. There's indifference and there's hatred. And there's those who investigate and who worship. Which are you? Where do you fit in this story?